Thank you so much for joining us, and welcome back to episode 14 of the Gradient Podcast. I am one third of your host, Armon.
I'm another one third, Jaden.
And I am the third third, Evan.
That bit's getting old, I'm not going to lie. So welcome back to another episode of the Gradient Podcast. And, you know, there's a lot of things going in the news, and there's a lot of things we want to cover. So let's start with something fresh and new to the Gradient Podcast. Let's talk about some of the little things that are in the news, starting with the Suez Canal. Now, located 75 miles from Egypt, the Suez Canal is a shipping canal that connects Europe to Asia. Now, a lot of you might be asking, why does this matter? Why is this relevant in our lives today? Well, as if you're not aware, the Evergreen ship, a 200,000-ton ship, a quarter mile long, was recently stuck in the canal for 3 days. And that's kind of important because 30% of all cargo ships have to go through that canal. And I think it's a really fun, you know, an interesting story to talk about. It's really not something that happens every single day. And a lot of, you know, as serious as it was, a lot of interesting, you know, thoughts and discussions and memes came out of it, you know. Maybe we should go back to the golden age of when we had to sail around Africa. No more canals.
Well, I mean, the obvious comment to be found here is, how on earth did a ship get stuck in that canal? Did it crash, or what was the can you paint the picture of what exactly happened?
So the ship actually didn't crash. It was simply sailing through the canal, and it ended up turning and hitting one side of the canal, and eventually just kept turning into that one side. And yes, the ship is unstuck, and today, March 29th, it was freed after 6 days of trying. So, you know, it was not like it crashed and it was the big thing that happened. It was just kind of going on its way through the canal and it just happened to get stuck.
Yeah, for how important the Suez Canal is, it's surprisingly narrow for just like one ship to be able to get stuck so easily. You would kind of assume that with how integral this stream of water is for like almost the entirety of global commerce, I'm generally surprised this is the first time we've seen this happen, because it does seem like a
it's actually happened a couple times before. You know, ships getting stuck is kind of a normal occurrence in the Suez Canal.
You'd think it would like sort of require some sort of solution to maybe widen the canal at some of the more like deafening parts. And for those wondering how they unstuck the ship, was required a lot of butter, I reckon, and oil.
No, but I mean, maybe we never really know, but
good amount of lubrication.
Something that's come out of this that a lot of people have, I guess, kind of found fun in is there's a way to actually look up on your phone or on your computer, you know, all the cargo ships in the world and kind of where they are at the moment. And people would look at that, go to the Suez Canal, they'd see hundreds and hundreds of ships lining up from the top and the bottom of the canal. They'd just see one canal, you know, one ship stuck in the middle of the canal. They'd check on that every single day. It gave people a purpose, you know?
So, moving on to something a little bit more serious, not as whimsical as a ship getting stuck into a canal might be, you might have seen the news coming out about one of YouTube's largest creators, David Dobrik, from Business Insider, allegations of David Dobrik fostering an environment where some of his friends, most notably Dirty Dom, were able to, unfortunately, sexually assault two young women. So a bit more of a serious topic. So we want to cover this topic with as much care as we possibly can. So just briefly go over the details without being too vulgar or descriptive of these incredibly harmful acts. During one of David Dobrik's vlogs, there is footage of one of his friends, a repeated member of the vlog squad, a group of friends that would appear in his YouTube videos. Dirty Dom, one of the more recurring members, can be seen sexually engaging with two women. Reports have come out that those acts were non-consensual, and so with all that you know in mind, there have been apology videos. There have been videos of other people's texting the stories, different views and sides of the same coin. So I want to open discussion to about that topic, about how you guys, reacted to the news or how you interpreted it.
So, personally, someone who has previously watched and enjoyed a lot of the David Dobrik videos, I think the obvious take here stands that regardless of however angle you view it, you understand that David Dobrik was 100% in the wrong, Dirty Dom was 100% in the wrong, and they deserve to take the full responsibility of the actions and all the consequences accountable. That being said, the sort of conversation that emerges from this is it acceptable to continue watching David Dobrik about how to separate the art from the artist, as we do so with a lot of famous musicians like Michael Jackson and R. Kelly and whatnot?
I think what this story is and what this story should be, I don't want to say it's a wake-up call, because all too often things like this happen, so it's not a wake-up call, because we should have woken up a long time ago. But I think a story like this needs to kind of give off the message that you never really know a person, and that it's really, really important to understand how these issues can come out of anyone, how these issues can hurt women specifically, and how we need to kind of spread awareness to these issues to prevent these things from happening again. It's really, I think in many situations like that, specifically with David Dobrik, we saw that it was a group of friends, right? And you have to ask yourself the question, what if one person had stood up? What if one person had said, hey, this is completely wrong, why are you doing this, right? When we spread that awareness, we can cause people to speak out and cause people to kind of take the first step to prevent something like this from happening in the future, which is, I think, absolutely just what we need to start looking forward into the future, because it's happened, like I said, way too many times, and it's not something that, it's something that shouldn't be as regular in a society as it is now. And when we spread that awareness, I think we can actually, you know, make a difference.
Oh, undoubtedly. And it's always important to check those around you to make sure they're sort of being lawful and respectful to everybody in that sense. And it can honestly be anyone. You're talking about David Dobrik, a guy who built his whole career on giving away cars to people, right? That's the least person you'd honestly expect to have a part in any of these like terrible activities. And that's why it's important to sort of be aware and be mindful and do what you can to ensure that those around you aren't involved in that sort of terrible actions.
I think one of the more aggravating things about this whole situation is the cowardice that David Dobrik has shown with releasing like a 2 to 5, it was a very short video on his secondary smaller podcast channel that has
and
a fraction
Dom
of
monetized
subscribers.
His video.
Hmm?
Dirty Dom, his apology video, he monetized it. He got money.
Yeah, I mean, but like just to focus on Dobrik's response, that was what gained the most traction. You know, he labeled it as a conversation, but comments and likes and dislikes were all turned off. It was incredibly short, incredibly artificial and corporate sounding, like it was like it was written by a team of lawyers, because it more than likely was. And it just didn't seem genuine at all. I'm sure there's plenty of people who've listed as, you know, have put it in the list of non-genuine apologies that have basically been a plague amongst YouTubers. So I think just that, you know, that cowardice, that inability to stand up for, you know, what he did, as you know, and knowing that it's wrong, that's what really aggravated me personally.
As teens, I want to know, what do you guys feel that we as teens could do right now, and what do you feel that we as teens could do in the future to kind of, like I said, you know, spreading awareness is important, but you know, we are going to be the ones growing into adults, and it's the, you know, that generation of people where stuff like this does happen. So what should we learn now, and what should we kind of understand now to take into the future? Like, what is your message to teens going forward?
I think because David Dobrik is such a large figure, especially amongst, you know, our demographic of teenagers, we sort of have become acclimated towards what we've seen. So many wrong examples that we're starting to now finally have ingrained in us what the correct thing to do is, where we've seen time and time again celebrities and, you know, figures of great importance, they just continue to do things are uncovered, where reports come out and, you know, allegations come out, where we see people of large importance, you know, doing the wrong thing. And so growing up with that, we sort of have already become accustomed to doing the right thing. Thank God. I mean, if there's any sort of silver lining here, where, you know, as teenagers growing up in this kind of environment, we already sort of understand what the right thing to do is. We don't have to learn it. We've already experienced it for the most part.
I personally feel like the step in the right direction is to get better role models. As much as we're so critical of cancel culture for being like the plague of the most smallest things, in situations like this, it's undoubtedly correct where you were sort of checking one of the most prominent influencers of all time, because they have, as the name suggests, influence over the younger generation. And when we allow ourselves to be influenced by people who are participating in these wrongdoings, we open ourselves to sort of being more desensitized towards these kinds of actions. And that's not the situation we want to be in as a society.
So if you or anyone you know is having issues with sexual assault or knows someone who is, and we all here at Gradient want you to know that help is available and that you can reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-4673 and there will be someone ready to speak with you.
Moving on, the March Madness basketball tournament is in full swing in this month of March. The tournament obviously consists of college athletics, both male and female, competing to see who is the most superior of the college athletic basketball teams. It's an event where many athletes are giving mainstream attention by professional sports, and fans try and see if they can come up with the perfect bracket, to which they have never availed. That being said, there exists a gigantic controversy this year about disparities between the male and female equipment rooms. The men were awarded a large
amount. I don't know if you guys actually saw the pictures or even our viewers at home, but you know, a little bit to kind of, I didn't mean to interject like that, but to kind of jump in, I think it's important that you actually see the pictures. I mean, if you look at these two pictures here, I think it's kind of, I don't want to say it's a joke, but I think it should be disrespectful, the difference between these two rooms. I mean, there's no circumstance where anything like that should be considered okay.
Right, and just to comment on it, as you can see, the men were given a large plethora of different athletic equipment to sort of establish their athletic peak, to put it in very ambiguous terms, while the females or the women athletes were given very minimal equipment and nothing more than a home gym would have. And there's generally no purpose for that. The whole argument was that they had no room, but then it was later shown that they had a wide range of gymnasiums where they can practice basketball, and their availability to put gym equipment there, to which they weren't originally.
Yeah, it was shown that there was copious amounts of room available for equipment to be placed, but they just didn't have the equipment. It almost does seem sort of like a joke where, you know, they're unpacking all the men's equipment, and they're like, oh shoot, we forgot the women's equipment. So they just grab one of the men's things and they put it on to the side, and then there's the women's weight room. It almost does seem like just a poorly written joke, but this is just the reality that has to be faced in this March Madness bracket. Is the women just are not being treated equally whatsoever in terms of, you know, the amount of available equipment and practice they have in comparison towards the men teams. And while this has been a very strange and I guess unique March Madness tournament in comparison to other years, I know there's been a lot of discussion about how different it is from other years because of all the COVID stuff, but just seeing that disparity between, you know, what should be like what is and what should be, it's just once again a reminder of what needs to be improved upon.
Have you guys seen the pictures? Or you can go ahead.
And the very like prevalent argument against this is that the male athletics give a lot more money to the NCAA, which is the College Athletics Association. But what you have to realize is that the NCAA is a non-profit organization, meaning all the funds they get are directed non-profit. Yeah, right. Regardless, it means that their sole purpose is to give a better platform for college athletics universally to be acquitted into the professional sports, assuming that they have the talent to do so. And they're very counterintuitive to that whole purpose when they don't give like any benefit to the women athletes who aren't given the weight room necessary to succeed.
Have you guys seen the pictures? I know Evan talked about, you know, it was like a joke, like, oh, last minute, let's just give them some dumbbells, right? But have you guys actually seen the pictures? There were pictures that came out of, like, I guess they were like tote bags that they give to the athletes after they finished competing or whatever. And if you saw like the men's tote bag, there was like custom stuff. There was like custom stuff for their teams. Like everything was like handpicked, handcrafted. Like you could tell there was effort into it. And then on the other side, the women's bag, you looked inside of it and it was just a bunch of generic like NCAA, like Evan said, oh, we need to get stuff in a tote bag. Pass me that water bottle. I got a water bottle and a t-shirt here. Whatever, yeah, that will work.
Grab whatever, you know, it's like they give out at like the gift shop or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Yeah, it really just seems like there was no effort put into even accommodating. It just seems like there was like minimal effort put into even like the basic necessities of the women's sports teams.
And it just highlights this idea that the NCAA does not, or even fans for that matter, just don't care as much about the women's athletics as they do the men's. And that just shows the sort of sexist drive that society has, where there should be zero reason as to why the men were given more benefit at all.
Now, moving on from the world of college sports to the world of college academics, now is a really large moment for students all across the country, because if you're a senior, college admissions are coming out, you'll know whether or not you made it. If you're a junior, you have SATs going on, and I mean, well, I guess if you're, you know, a freshman and a sophomore, it's just normal life. But still, for sophomores and juniors, it's a lot going on. It's a lot, you know, now is the time to put your A game on. And I think as juniors ourselves, a really good talking point to start off with is to talk about the SAT. Now, we all took the SAT back in March, but there are still a lot of people around this country and around the world, for that matter, who are still trying to take the SAT. But an interesting fact about, you know, SATs and this year's college acceptances, a lot of colleges have actually chosen to admit the SAT from their admissions process, which I think is something I can't say for certain if this is something we've seen before, but it definitely starts to bring up some questions and points of discussions of, are these standardized testing, is standardized testing working for children, and is standardized testing the best measure we have to determine someone's eligibility for something as important as college?
I don't think, at least I can speak for myself and Armand. I'm not entirely sure about Jane, because he never told us he never said what his score was to either Armand or I. But I know for a fact that I can speak for Armand and I when I say that we have pretty biased views about whether or not to remove the SAT, because our SAT scores are more than serviceable. I don't want to get into numbers or specifics or whatever, but our SAT scores we'll just say are quite good. And we'll leave it at that. So to, you know, asking us about, you know, whether or not we should remove SAT as a requirement, I think, you know, it's safe to say that we have a bias towards keeping it, because we know that it grants us an advantage in the application process. However, putting myself in the shoes of someone who isn't as, you know, who doesn't have access to the same resources as I do, you know, with like SAT tutors and whatnot, I can definitely see the arguments for, you know, removing the SAT as a requirement for college admissions, because that can be for someone who's, you know, more active in, for example, if someone's more active as like a volunteer in their community, but, you know, their academics aren't necessarily as as great, you know, having a poor SAT score could really be hindrance to someone who really does deserve to, you know, to go to, you know, an esteemed university. So I definitely see the arguments, you know, for why, you know, being removing SAT requirement, you know, could be a just an overall improvement on how academia works in our country.
And to almost provide a gauge of intensity to our bias on the subject, I know for me personally, my dream school is Harvard. I know Jaden's is Cornell, and I know Evan's is somewhere very high as well. But yeah, all right. So somewhere. That being said, I guess I'm letting the Indian part of me expound itself a little bit when I am very fixated on the idea of an SAT. But I do have a lot of friends who are incredibly smart and are deserving to go to some of the more esteemed colleges in the United States who have chosen to not put their SAT score in their applications because of the lack of resources. They couldn't take it as much because of the whole COVID restrictions and whatnot, and they still have amounted to great success in the in their acceptances to different colleges. They've gone to like Berkeley, UPenn, John Hopkins, all these very big schools, having omitted their SAT scores.
Yeah, when Evan said, you know, listen, you know, saying Armand and Evan are confident in their SAT scores, I mean, we could probably add my name to that. I mean, we could add my name to that list.
Definitely can. We're all
I mean, in theory, yes. You've never disclosed to the rest of the podcast what your scores were.
What we could say is that I have always wanted to go to Cornell, and that I'm still very confident that I will be able to go to Cornell.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
Moving on, I definitely understand where...
I found out Jaden's score, and I'll give a little range for it. It's between 0 and 1,600.
That is true. I can't argue with that. I think that for a lot of people, even if you do have access to SAT resources, I think what standardized testing as a whole is kind of boiled down to is you're not just showing how well you could do on a test, you're not just showing how well you know, how much information you can kind of regurgitate. It's also, are you going to crack under the pressure? And you have, like Armand said, you have to consider the psychological effects of telling someone, hey, this test is going to determine your entire future. Here's 4 hours. Have fun, you know?
Right.
And if
you don't mind, I want to expand on that idea just a little bit. I've heard of the common comparison between the United States education system and Finland, for example.
They're number one in education, yeah.
Number one in education. They don't have standardized testing, and I know a lot of the schools there, the public school system in Finland doesn't have homework.
Yep.
And that being said, they still manage to rank that highly on the education rankings, I guess, because they don't strive their emphasis on regurgitating information or memorizing a certain set of vocabulary terms and whatnot. Their whole purpose is not to overwork the students and stress them mentally. It's simply to deliver the information to where they can comprehend and apply it in daily life.
I mean, students should, by nature, want to learn. And I think even if we go beyond just, oh, the 4 hours you have, you know, actually taking the test, the 11, not more than 11, like the 15, 16, 17 years you have before you probably take your first SAT. I think knowing that, okay, all of this, you know, really means nothing to you. It's just, hey, there's this test that's going to happen in the future. Make sure you, you know, you don't mess things up for yourself. I think it really, you have to question, you know, is that really how learning should be? Where you're not learning to learn, you're not learning to the sake of, you know, bettering yourself. You're learning for the sole reason of, hey, I need to pass this test, right? It's almost like when people, when, you know, a student will get upset with a teacher for them not teaching them like the actual curriculum and making it interesting. They're just reading straight from the book because this is what's on your test. This is all they're paying me to teach you, right? And I think it's that kind of issue where I genuinely think that that is the wrong approach to it, and that we do need a system that rewards, you know, teaching students valuable lessons and information that's going to help them in a way that students are happy and willing to learn.
And to sort of, I guess, almost give a solution or like a goal to the modified education system that Jaden was like underlyingly proposing, I think we know our education system is corrupt when people care more about the number on the aptitude test that they get rather than their ability to learn the information. When people will almost like subside actual learning for however much increased points on their SAT or ACT score, that's when you know the education system is incorrectly structured.
Mm-hmm. You know, for a system with that has the sole purpose of teaching the youth how to be functioning members of society, it really does a bad job of teaching the youth how to be functioning members of society. But, you know, that's a little bit of a tangent that we could talk about, you know, probably for
let's doggone college board again.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I am more than happy to give an entire episode of us just dogging on college board.
Right, write that down. We'll put that on the to-do list.
Yeah,
episode two,
Electric Boogaloo.
Segment against college board.
Just college board.
scourge of
Comedy Central host. I mean, Comedy Central hosts the roast of College Board.
Their curriculum was bad. That. Their hashtags were bad. There was really nothing to like about College Board.
True fans of the Other Green podcast would understand the differences.
Don't take away like any of our scores and validate us. If that's the case, we have our full respect for you.
Listen, I'm still taking 5 APs. I gotta have good scores.
They have the greatest hashtags. Oh my god, they're very relatable and quirky for the kids.
Quirky college.
Someone's like grading my AP research paper. It's like, wait a minute, I know this kid.
I know this guy.
He's like, crap about College Board. Gives me a 1. God, my nightmares.
I mean, you gotta finish the research paper, but, you know, to get better than a 1 still.
I'm not gonna
comment on that topic.
No comment on that. Media silence.
Moving on. Transition.
Transition. An actual transition. I think. As much as our conversation is fixated on the idea that the SAT is the most important part of your college application, which I guess in some schools it's the instance, but for those who are unfortunate to not have the 1500 plus SAT score that a lot of successful people end up having, they have to realize that it's by no means the only measure that colleges are taking when they're measuring acceptance and deciding whether to admit you into their college. You have to cultivate your application, your extracurriculars, your drives, your essays. So if you unfortunately don't have the perfect score, don't ever think negative of yourself in that instance, because there's so much more to your admission and you as a person than just a number out of a scale of 1600.
Absolutely, absolutely. I couldn't agree with that more. That's why I said 2 absolutelys.
Opposed to just the 1 absolutely, yeah. Which would indicate he agrees with it, but he could agree more. 2 absolutely does indicate that he agrees with it fully. And I couldn't agree more. But despite the seemingly awful tangent about absolutely,
a little banter we have going on.
We can call it
something
banter.
New.
Witty banter.
Something we're trying out. You know, not like we've been friends for like, what, 3 years? Something like that. I don't know.
Actually, every time we go to record a Gradient episode, we all just have a really long script. We all turn into robots and we just kind of go at it, you know? It's the authenticity.
If you watch closely, you can see my eyes will blink horizontally.
Don't pour water on him. He'll just buzz.
With that statement. You spelled statement wrong in there, by the way.
We could never be robots.
Never be that robotic.
We would be awful robots, to be fair.
True.
But to try and write in this conversation even the slightest amount, because Jesus, we are off topic now. So once again, I want to keep in mind that I am someone with a decently high SAT score, not the best, but it's
you had to say it again.
97th percentile.
We're gonna title it episode 14. Evan just goes on about his SAT score.
Hey, 99.
Listen, I'm proud of it. I can't say I worked hard, but I'm proud of it. But I digress.
I think you're deserving of it.
Yeah, I mean, I tried my best. I picked my answers, you know. I'm a pretty good test taker. But
I showed up to school that day.
I mean, you might be there. In the 97th percentile, but I mean, if you worked hard like me, you'd be in the 99.
Evan, 99.7 percentile, yeah, yeah.
Moving on. I don't want to hear any more of this.
Actually, moving on. Okay, I am the one who likes to move
There's
on.
There's going to be a little bit cuts you have to do in there, Jaden.
Why?
Just because it's a little all over the place.
I'm not sure where to go from here, honestly.
talk about extracurriculars.
I got it. No, we got to end. We've like 50 minutes.
Oh, okay. We're at 50 minutes?
Yeah. It's going to be shorter, but still. So, transitioning from whatever, an unorganized mess to something more in our orderly fashion. Thank you so much for watching this episode of the Gradient Podcast. We are really sporadic with our breaks. You never know how long they're going to be. You never know how short they're going to be. But every single time we always do, you know, find the time to come back together and have a lot of fun and, you know, doing stuff like this. So we really appreciate you tuning in. So
let's just say that consistency is not our strong suit.
That being said, we will have a couple episodes coming your way in the very near future. And a little takeaways from this episode. we're hoping, or at least Evan's hoping, for some validation about his SAT score.
Yeah, comment how good his SAT score was. Just boost his ego even more.
In this episode, we should have a tally marker on the side.
I can put a tally marker. We can make that work.
Play a little game out of it. Can we do our prediction right now?
Yeah, I'll go first. Let me see if I can remember. I know he did it. If we're counting bloopers, then I don't think they've invented numbers for that yet.
If we're counting things that were not, that will not be in the podcast.
Lightning round.
Go. 4.
Evan?
I'm thinking like 5, honestly.
I want to say, you know what, I think we're over-exaggerating a little bit for the things that's going to get into the podcast 3, but I think we're talking about the entirety of this Zoom call. I'm guessing about 157.
That's accurate. I mean,
you know, that's not your time actual until. Score. 158. No.
It's a lie all along. Again, thank you so much for watching. Like we do at the end of every episode, we like to remind you guys to follow us on social media. You can follow our Instagram and Twitter at Gradient Podcast. Us talking about the subreddit didn't make it into the last cut. We do have a subreddit now. I believe it's r/Gradient Podcast, correct?
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
There's no posts.
There's no posts. Anything. You could be the first one.
You could be the first.
You could be the first,
there's
exactly.
There's some gradient memes in there.
You.
Yeah.
Yes, you. Right there, you. You can christen the Gradient Podcast.
I will personally upvote every single Suez Canal meme that I see. Okay? That's my promise.
That's free karma right there for all you.
But in a last honest conversation, regardless of, I know for juniors and seniors alike, the pressures of school admissions is very, very daunting, but we wish you all the best of luck here at the Gradient Podcast, and we're rooting for all of you, and we know you guys can do it. So to end the whole thing, I'm Armand.
I'm Evan.
And I'm Jaden.
Thank you so much for tuning in to episode 14.
Thank you.